And I'm here today with an interview with a good friend, Bruce Kirsten. We've known each other for eons, it feels like. And he is really involved in the sustainability space and is working really in terms of property and casualty. And with the advent of the start of hurricane season, I thought it would be a good time to kind of catch up and kind of share his take on what's going on with climate change and what he sees in the property insurance industry. So, Bruce, thanks for taking the time to chat.
Oh, my pleasure, Jim.
Awesome. So, tell us a little bit about the firm that you're with and the work that you do.
So, I'm with an insurance broker called Bradley & Parker. This year we're celebrating our 80th anniversary, and we sell property and casualty insurance and employee benefits. Like I said, we've been around for 80 years. We have over 15,000 clients, and one of the big advantages I would say we have in the space is because we have a very good reputation with carriers, we are able to customize packages with a variety of carriers, whichever is the best fit for our customers.
Cool. So now you're based on Long Island. You know, Long Island kind of took it in the chops with Hurricane Sandy, and that legacy still lives on. Like, what do you think the insurance industry learned from the occurrence of Hurricane Sandy a number of years ago?
Well, I think like most entities and media outlets, and even people that a couple of years ago weren't really paying attention to climate change, I think that the focus and the realization instead of the denial of climate change is something that is pretty much ever present. I mean, there's still a couple of deniers out there, but I think for the most part, if you remember years ago, everybody called it global warming. So now it's officially climate change, and everybody seems to be talking about it. The biggest, you know, problem that I see in many others, including the carriers, is that as climate change progresses, what's happening is obviously the frequency and the intensity of all of the storms, including hurricanes and tropical storms, are increasing. And as a matter of fact, you mentioned Hurricane Sandy. Hurricane Sandy had been reduced to a tropical storm when it hit land. It wasn't even a hurricane at that point. Huh. And look at how much damage it did.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the fact that the entirety of Lower Manhattan was literally underwater and took out half the city, it took at least a year for the city, bottom of the city, to recover, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure of how long, but I would say, you know, I would agree with you, it was at least a year, probably more than that, depending on where and to the extent that the damage happened. You know, the other thing that I've noticed that's different is that, you know, when you talk about hurricanes, most people are concerned with the wind damage from the storms. But the truth of the matter is that floods are much more likely to be the greater cause of damage to people's property and businesses. So, you know, you always picture like hurricanes, like even like Andrew and the things that happened in Florida where roofs were flying off buildings and stuff. The reality of it is flooding, you know, that's even more of an issue.
And it's not just flooding from excessive rainfall like we saw in Houston, but like, you know, storm surge, that water that basically rushes up before the storm actually hits.
Exactly. It's both. And then, you know, sort of to your point, as the water levels are rising, the rivers are overflowing more often, and coastal areas that have never really seen flooding before are now frequently becoming, you know, inundated by these rising waters. The other big factor that I've come up against is that, as you know, as these temperatures are basically supercharging the entire water cycle, the downpours are getting stronger, mm-hmm. and they're amplifying the flood risks. I had found a statistic that from 1950 until 2018, the average annual precipitation has risen in 90% of the United States. Mm. And according to data that I collected from a place called the Climate Engine, the great majority of the country has experienced above average rainfall so far this year again.
Yes.
So it looks like we're on track for breaking another rainfall record in 2019.
And one of the issues around, obviously, property and casualty insurance is a lot of people aren't aware that homeowners insurance doesn't cover flooding, does it?
No. As a matter of fact, that's another reason. I mean, not that we shouldn't worry about any of the hazards, but it's one of the reasons that, you know, wind is one of the standard things that homeowners policies do cover. However, what's known as surface water is specifically not covered by any homeowners policies regardless. So if water were to enter your home through the roof or through windows or things like that, you would be covered by that type of damage. But standing water that rises from the ground surface up is specifically not protected.
So what happens when a person has a property, let's say along the shore, that suffers a loss that isn't where the property is basically inundated with water? Like, what's the situation look like for the person who has that kind of a loss that is not covered by homeowners insurance?
Right. Well, so unfortunately, the majority of people that are not required by their lending institution to obtain flooding insurance actually don't have it. So they're completely unprotected. Standard flood policies, which, you know, people can take out, usually, like I said, required by their lender, are backed by FEMA. But like I said, the majority of people, even in low risk areas where, you know, you could say, well, I could take a shot at it, in a low risk area, flood insurance is amazingly affordable, and it's just a simple add on. And with these rising waters, you know, even if you're in a low risk zone, you still, you know, have that risk of having the flooding. In addition, even the people that do take those mandatory by lender policies that are backed by FEMA, they only pay up to $250,000 on a policy, and they throw in another $100,000 for contents of the home that's been ruined or damaged. But the problem with that is, you know, most homes, $250,000 is going to give you your home back.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of homes, especially along the shore, are going to be valued at much higher levels than that.
Exactly. And yeah. And that's why what a lot of people do is they purchase additional flood insurance from private carriers, carriers that we would recognize as being AIG and Chubb and even Pure. Well, they'll offer coverage, and they're helpful especially with higher valued properties where the FEMA insurance is not even going to, you know, make a dent in what the loss is.
Well, even
the other thing is that, I'm sorry, Jim, but the other advantage in going with private carriers is when they pay based on replacement cost. FEMA policies only pay depreciated.
So what do you mean? What do you mean depreciated? Like,
so if you have let's say you just bought a new stove and it's destroyed by a flood, right? And the stove cost you $2,000. The private policies, especially the better ones, they'll give you the full replacement value. Even if that stove is now $3,000 to buy, they'll give you $3,000 for it. FEMA, on the other hand, will look at that stove that was $2,000 and they'll say, well, you know, you've used it for a year and it's depreciated in value, so, you know, we're only going to give you $1,000 for that stove.
Wow.
So there's additional exposure. You know, you have insurance, but yet it's not enough. You know, there's not enough, you know, fuel in the tank to cover it.
Yeah, go out and buy a camping stove, basically, is what they're saying.
Yeah, pretty much. And additionally, you know, even renters are also at that risk because, like homeowners, renters' policies don't carry the protection against floods either. So if you are renting an apartment, you don't own the structure itself, but still, you have contents that are of value.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you saw the webinar that I have on my website, but I mean, one of the big takeaways there is really to advise people, given the current situation, to avoid owning property that's exposed to shore risk, just because of the amount of risk that they're taking on in terms of financial risk in their portfolios.
Yeah, but you know, I think with that, then it becomes like a value proposition. So whereas, you know, let's say people that are living on a, you know, an average budget or a modest budget, you know, they're for the most part trying to maybe avoid those areas. However, the wealthier people that want a place in the Hamptons, say, they're willing to take the risk, I guess, or to, you know, come up with one of these third-party carrier plans to protect as much as they can for, you know, for the privilege of having that waterfront property.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my feeling is just it's better to rent than to own. What's the takeaway in terms of businesses that are in those exposed areas? Like, what's the risk that a business has if, let's say, they're exposed to, like, a flooding event or a hurricane that comes in and, let's say, wipes out a particular town?
Yeah, so that's a really good point, Jim. The problem with business policies is they all exclude flood protection just the way homeowners does. And although businesses can and according to me, what I believe, they should buy flood insurance, they're still never going to be covered for business interruption that's caused by the floods. So let's say, you know, you have $1 million worth of damage to your building and the contents and stuff like that, and you're covered by your flood thing, but maybe now your business has to be shut for a month, so you lose a month's worth of cash flow.
Yeah.
You might lose employees. You know, I mean, it could really take out the business altogether. So the best way that I found, you know, or that I recommend people to protect themselves is to try to engage like a third-party solution that will restore their business operations, their phones, their computers, and anything else they have after a flood occurs. So some of these are people can check in their local area and read reviews, but think restoration companies might be a good resource. There are companies that are specifically like business continuation agencies, and they'll even come in. If your facility is ruined, they'll actually bring in temporary office space and put it out in your parking lot, say, and hook up the internet and cubicles, and you know, you're back in business. That's really the hybrid best way to protect yourself: have the flood insurance, the business owner's policy, and this third party. A lot of these companies, if you engage with them and pay them a modest retainer, they put you basically at the front of the line. So if everybody suffers an emergency, you know that you're already an existing customer and you will get immediate attention.
Well, that just goes to show that what's really required by people and businesses as well is advanced planning. You know, you have to know it, be aware of kind of the risks that are out there, and start planning on how do I address these if these things happen, and kind of have a plan to deal with them. But I mean, the sad reality is most people kind of, and most businesses even, go through life, you know, from a day-to-day perspective.
Absolutely. And part of the additional problem is, so let's take the scenario where somebody doesn't engage one of these third parties we're talking about, and then their business is interrupted, and it's a really horrible storm, and it's taken out several parts of the country. The way many of these operations work is, you know, they recruit workers from all across the states. So let's say that, you know, during Sandy, right, workers from Texas were flown in to help restore companies, right? If multiple areas of the country are hit at the same time, you run out of workers to actually be able to restore the businesses. So that's even more the reason to try to become a preferred client, and that, you know, those costs involved, you know, they're necessary tax deduction, and they protect you as fully as possible.
No doubt. I mean, I think that's great advice, and I know that from a corporate perspective, we've developed plans to basically set up alternate offices at other locations. Like, we, you know, as a company, you have to create those plans to for business continuation, really. Because if you don't, really, then the rest of your financial life is really put at risk, right? I mean, if you can't meet your payroll, if you can't pay your rent on your whatever machinery that you have, or, you know, meet your obligations going forward, you know, it basically puts everything at risk.
Absolutely. And, you know, to your point too, especially at this point that we're living in terms of technology, like, I even know, you know, my business files, I have them all in the cloud.
Yeah.
So to your point, you know, I also have two office spaces. If, you know, even if both of them got wiped out because, you know, they're within 25 miles of each other, I could go to Michigan, log on to my cloud account, and I would still have all my data saved.
Yeah.
So it's very possible and affordable to be able to do exactly what you said, to maintain some other shell. But for people that maybe have larger operations and are not as flexible, you know, to be able to do that, these third-party, like, restoration-type companies are also a good bet to look into.
I know that with some of the larger reinsurers, like, Munich RE, have been looking at climate change and climate change issues, because pretty much they're holding the bag in terms of making sure that everybody else stays whole. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I mean, what do you hear from those entities that offers some insight in terms of how the industry is changing and how they see climate is changing?
Well, I think what I see them mostly doing is they're becoming much more involved in terms of helping their clients protect against claims and losses. It's mutualistic, right? So they're sending out a lot of information, email blasts, different documents are coming in all the time to help educate the public, you know, both on the personal line side and the commercial line side, in terms of some of the topics even you and I are discussing, but ways to protect yourself and, like, what to do when you hear a hurricane is coming or things like that. And it works both ways, because one, it helps the business not fold, and two, I believe it was Hurricane Andrew when a lot of the insurance carriers actually went out of business because they couldn't pay on the claims. So they're doing it for, you know, mutual benefit. They're doing it so that they stay alive, and they're doing it so, you know, their customers are more protected. So it's a little bit more holistic than it used to be. It's almost like in the medical industry, the physicians that focus more on wellness than treating sicknesses.
Yeah. So, I mean, clearly in the past 10 years, it seems like climate change is accelerating. You know, it was earlier this year, maybe in February, it was 84 degrees in the Arctic. Do you see with the insurance industry, is that affecting premiums in terms of premiums increasing as well, because they're seeing it advance? There's the risk from this kind of acceleration in terms of climate and claims?
Yes, mostly where I think the situation is coming from is that, you know, flood insurance requirements are determined by the use of these things called flood maps that show the, you know, inherent risk of flooding based primarily on location and elevation. But flood hazards change over time due to things like new land use or by natural forces such as changing weather, which we're discussing, or terrain changes, or even the wildfires that they're having out west, you know, on a very consistent basis. Yeah. So as those maps get redrawn, some people that were in low-risk areas are now in higher-risk areas, and the higher the risk area, the higher the premium goes. So one beneficial thing is that if somebody has already purchased flood insurance before their flood zone is riskier than the old one, their old insurance rate is grandfathered in. So, you know, it's another way to hedge against it is, you know, you get into the market before you're put in a riskier area.
Yeah.
The other thing that I find kind of strange is that about 20% of flood insurance claims actually come from outside of high risk areas, and that's where the rates are the cheapest. So it's, you know, it's counterintuitive, but it's almost a no-brainer to somebody in a low risk to just throw in a very low cost flood insurance policy for two reasons: one, so that it's their rates protected going forward, and two, knowing that a fifth of all of the claims are from those low risk areas.
So do you see, do you find yourself talking to realtors about making sure that they understand these kinds of risks, or do you see them just not interested in talking about it at all?
That's a good question, but I have not found that I've had that much experience talking to realtors per se. Mostly it's business owners and, you know, personal lines customers. But that just might be because of my niche. I just don't happen to service a lot of realtors.
Yeah, well, no comment. So what advice do you have for people who are on, who own shore properties? I mean, other than just buy a flood policy, like what other advice is there? I mean, is it raising the house? Is that an option? Is it, are there physical things that they can do to try to improve their result in terms of dealing with sea level rise?
Well, I mean, a lot of the homes out, like say in the Hamptons area, for years now have been put up on stilts. But I think that part of the concern is just to make sure that they're going with a good, solid building firm with good engineering, because I've seen, you know, a lot of work that's done that appears like it's going to hold. It's almost like when you're a little kid and you dug sand things at the ocean, you know, and you thought you build this giant fort and one wave comes and it knocks it all down. Some of the, even the repair work that I've seen in Sandy, even some of the work that I've read about that's been done down in Long Beach, they say, you know, like one good wave is going to take down all those walls that were put up. It's a little bit of controversial and some people take the other side of it, but I think it's very important to make sure that the structure is built as much like a fortress as possible. That's one way. And then the second way, I think, is just to fully, you know, insure it and make sure at least if, God forbid, something happens, you'll be able to, you know, get your money back and not have a complete loss.
You mentioned the fires in California. Like, do you guys deal in that market at all, being in Long Island, or do you have clients that have businesses out there where you've kind of seen that?
Somewhat, yeah. We are we're licensed in every state in the union for property and casualty insurance. So we do have customers all over the country, and we, you know, we have heard, you know, and have had, you know, numerous claims of fire losses and things like that. There's nothing good about a fire, but the big thing is that fire is one of the hazards that are covered by homeowners policies.
I've seen, you know, I wrote an article, I think it was last year, a lot of property insurance companies are actually stopping covering properties in what they consider more risky areas. So people are actually finding it harder to find fire insurance or property insurance for properties that are in wooded areas.
Yeah, they do make it more difficult. And part of the general trend, although we do, because like I said before, we are open to a lot of carriers, what you find, especially on the personal line side now, is some of the carriers are pressuring people that in order to provide them with adequate or even any kind of homeowners policies, they're trying to force people into bundling their auto into it to get more business from the customer. And there are several carriers that won't write the policies unless you bundle it. Personally, I believe in giving people the choice of where you want to do business. So in many cases, I suggest, you know, one company for homeowners and a separate company. I know in my own case, I have one carrier for my homeowners and I have a separate carrier for auto, mostly because, you know, I can do better economically and I feel I have better protection. So, but the industry is bucking back by trying to, you know, get you to sign everything up that you have.
Yeah. I mean, they're trying to maximize the amount of premium that they get for a particular potential loss.
Right.
One of the things I meant to ask when we were talking about FEMA before, I meant to bring it up, was one of the experiences that I know a lot of people have had is the slow rate at which FEMA actually pays out on claims. It for them, it seemed to be really a process over a number of years to try to have themselves made full. So even though they were, you know, obviously lost their house and had a claim, you know, it's not like an instantaneous result. Like, what's your take on that and with FEMA specifically?
I think it's, you know, to me, my understanding of it is it's, you know, it's a combination of red tape and cash flow. So, you know, the processing definitely seems like it's usually behind, you know, another good reason to go with a carrier. You know, some of the upscale carriers for higher net worth people, companies like Chubb, in my experience, sometimes they'll write the check to, like, the day after,
yeah.
You know, literally, right? So that's one way, you know, you take what you can get from FEMA, but to your point, they are slow to pay. The other thing about FEMA is, which is a little bit different, is that if a storm is declared a natural disaster, FEMA offers people low interest loans as well on top of it. And it seems like the loans go through quicker than just the payments because it is a loan, so FEMA is going to make some money. But they do require lenders to purchase flood insurance as a condition to even getting the loan. And the other interesting thing, it's actually a FEMA statistic that I came across, is according to FEMA, just 1 inch of water in a home can cost more than $25,000 in damage. And that's just an inch of water. Look at like what happened in New Orleans. Remember, the water was like 6 feet off the ground?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a huge issue is mold. Like, how does mold caused by water get dealt with by these kinds of policies as well? Because mold really creates a toxic environment where people can't live there at all, right?
Right. Well, so that, again, would be covered by, you know, because it's surface water, right? The only way that peril is protected is if it's surface water and the person has the flood insurance.
Yeah.
And then that mold is, you know, a condition that develops because of damage from the flood. So that would be covered.
Mm.
But you're right. I mean, the mold is deadly. You know, it's completely toxic, and you obviously can't live in that environment.
If people want to learn more from what you do and reach out to you, how can they reach out to you?
Well, I'm happy to answer any questions any of your listeners have, Jim. And if people want to hear any more from me, or they have any interest in talking to me about any commercial or personal insurance or employee benefits needs, I welcome their calls at my direct line, which is 631-650-4082. I'll just repeat that number one more time. It's 631-650-4082. And I'd be happy to talk to any of your listeners.
Well, awesome. I think once we get closer to the end of hurricane season, maybe we should do a redux and kind of evaluate kind of how things have shifted, because, you know, clearly we're seeing things shift almost on an annual basis, and it looks like things are accelerating. So let's make a point of chatting again in a couple of months, maybe towards November.
All right, that sounds good, and hopefully we'll have better news instead of worse news, right?
That sounds good. All right, have a good day, and I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, bud.
Okay, thanks so much.
See you.
Take care.
Bye.